so many distractions that can take you offline in a heartbeat. And what made me stop was I ran out of money. Stayed sober for 4 years, and then I thought, I can drink again responsibly, and I couldn't do that.
Okay, good morning to everybody, and thank you very much for tuning in. Forgive us, Arthur and I, we had a bit of a long format content break. Arthur, you were in America calivating all around the world.
I was in Canada and America, it was a good time. So Brothers 50th, played a lot of golf, beautiful golf courses, I'll tell you that.
Which golf courses did you play?
So Cabot Cliffs, Cabot Links. Cabot Cliffs, I think, is in the top 15 in the world.
Sure.
So super special course. And then New York was just being a tourist for a couple of days. So it was nice. Having a kid doesn't really make you feel like you've had a holiday, to be honest. But
I was about to ask you, traveling with the kids a bit different.
Yeah, it wasn't. Actually, it was fun. It wasn't as bad as what we expected, but it was good. So we've got to grind till the rest of the year and push through. Don't feel rejuvenated from the break, but we might carry on, eh?
Yeah, you went straight back into business.
Straight back. No, jet lag. Straight back at the office. But yeah, super excited to speak to Anton. We've wanted to do this for a while. As you can see from his figurine, he's got his eyebrows plucked, his nose waxed.
Yeah.
You know, he's that type of guy.
Yes, he is.
Very, very heterosexual.
Yeah.
I know the woman golfing, or the woman... How do I explain this properly without sounding...
We feel very inferior this morning.
Women golf at Danefern has gone up 40% because of Anton Aid.
Abby, we know he loves you lots. Yeah. But maybe some other woman definitely sees him as some candy.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Well, you can look, but don't touch.
Well, on that note, we've got Anton Haig, like Arthur said this morning. We've wanted to do this for quite some time, Anton. Thank you for the braveness to be here this morning. Yep. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to engage with you a little bit, and we're excited to listen to your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, I know we've been discussing this for a while now, and obviously golf is my passion, and yeah, telling my story, I think viewers will enjoy it, and let's go.
Let's do this. I'll do a quick intro. So 11 tour wins. Your story is of incredible highs and deep lows.
Yeah.
You form a top 100 player in the world.
Yeah.
What was the ranking? What was that ranking in the top 100?
I think after the Johnny Walker win, I think I dropped to 81.
Yeah,
81. That was my lowest.
Yes, what an incredible achievement. Yeah. Very few South Africans can claim that title. And then current residing coach at Danefern. You've got your academy over there.
Yeah, so listen, I started, obviously with the injuries, I think it was about 2.5 years ago, I realized that I need to set up something else, but from playing golf. And I love golf, so I wanted to stay in the fraternity of golf. And yeah, so I started off coaching down in White River for a bit, on the White River Golf Estate.
Because you were originally an Nelspruit boy.
Yeah, originally White River boy.
White River,
and yeah. My folks lived on the golf estate there, and my mom was like, why don't you give coaching a go? And I said, okay, well, let's see what it's all about. And it really took off down there. And it gave me the courage to kind of continue it. And I moved up to Joburg. Well, obviously, I was living in Joburg, but very tough to find a facility where you can coach from. And Swing Golf, which is closed now, but they opened up, and that's where I started. And it was a great platform to find clients and show people that, you know, I had the capability of being a good coach. And I then approached Danefern, and in October last year they gave me the thumbs up, and I've been there since October last year. Got a good clientele. I mean, I'm a Danefern boy through and through. I think I moved up from White River when I was 13, and I've been a Danefern resident and ambassador. You know, when I turned pro, played out at Danefern, and I know most of the residents there, so it's kind of like home.
Yeah.
So it's been a great start, and looking forward to the journey there. And we've got a long way to go to set up my academy. But great clientele, great people that side, and
I love the content you're putting out there to show the before after, some swing stuff that you do. It gives you a bit of insight into the coaches, and the reason I mention it is that South African coaches typically, there's a couple on a handful, but they don't typically do good content and showcase. And unfortunately, they don't. You know, there's still a lot of learning that's happening. If you compare that to a European or an American type of mindset of a coach, they almost have permanent content creators behind them all the time. But you've done an incredible job with that.
You know, it's old school ways, you know. To fit in with golf now, you've got to have stuff on social media. People want to see what you do, how you do it, and they want to see how you've improved and how you can help others in the journey of golf. I mean, golf's tough, eh? There's so many moving parts to the golf swing. If you don't understand body movement and how to move to the golf ball, it becomes a challenge. And that's why, you know, you don't see people, you know, wanting to take up golf, because they try it and you can't just hit a ball in the direction you want to go. There's a lot of things you have to get right first. And I like to not only have good golf swings on my platform, but to show, like, look, I've started with this beginner. These are some great drills. Does he hit it great all the time? No. But it's showing the journey, showing the progression, moving into understanding how to swing a club properly.
Well, I think it's important what you just said, Dan. It's a bit random, but recently Burger King launched this campaign that they showed physically their food going off, molded.
Sure.
And the reason they did that was to show people it's real meat, it's real buns. You know, it's real capacity. So I think that's a very good point what you made there, that we want to see the in-between as well, because otherwise it's not organic and it's unrelatable to people.
Yeah.
Because I just got a very humbling week in golf. Worst round of 92 on Sunday and yesterday 75. So I can tell you now what you just said there about golf. It humbles the shit out of you.
Big time.
And on Sunday, I felt I didn't even know what to do anymore. I didn't know how to swing, where to hit the ball.
You just got back from Zim, so you had a bit of jet lag.
that hour and a half flight really took it out of me.
That dollar-rand exchange.
I think it was the American dollars that I had to correct. It shocked your system a little bit. You know, I didn't think about that, but maybe I felt so cash-strapped on Sunday that I just couldn't think.
You couldn't have halfway.
I'm with you. You were starving. I'm with you.
But, we all know. As ex-players, that's the mental part of the game.
Sure.
If you can be top 50 in the world, they go through the same struggles as a beginner. Trust me, it's a stupid game.
Yeah,
it really is. Once you think you've got it, then you automatically just lose it. It humbilizes you so quickly.
Well, you can see it with Brooks Koepka. I mean, remember he was at a downer, and then he thought
Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, Jordan, I mean, Ricky
Fowler,
Justin Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, the guys, I mean, who's, I mean, like, Shaul Swatzel also, know, incredible golfer, lost his confidence. This game, I mean, I remember on the European Tour leading three golf tournaments after the first day. I mean, shooting 62, 63, and then shooting 80s the next day and missing the cut. I mean, that's how brutal this game is. Yes, was I sober? I think a few of them were straight from the club after. But this game, one day you feel great, and then the next day you can get on that tee box and look at that fairway and go, jeepers, I don't know how to hit it.
Yeah.
It's, you don't feel comfortable. It doesn't suit your eye line. And worst case is, like, some golf courses that you play every year don't suit your eye.
Yeah, 100%.
And you're like, how do I, you know, you've got to go and play, especially when you're playing badly, you've got to get your rankings
up. You've got to at least do something.
And you end up playing too much golf to try and, you know, keep your card, and that also burns you out. So it's really difficult to monitor your how much you play, how much you're training, how much you're practicing, and keeping that balance and having enough time to rest. I think what golfers don't understand is, like, there's so much more to than hitting balls. It's gym work, it's seeing your psychologist, it's stretching, it's eating correctly, you know. Are you taking the right supplements?
Yeah.
Especially for me when I was injured, you know, painkillers and... You know, it all has its the pros and cons, but, like, you have got to really be mobile in this game, and strength plays a big role, but it's the correct training, where I did not do the correct training.
He was just trying to be a Hugo
Boss
model.
I just wanted that beach body. I didn't care what my golf swing kind of looked like. I just wanted to look good for the girls on the beach. But I quickly found out that that wasn't the way forward with all the operations I've had. It's been a hectic stop-start career in my life.
Well, I think that's what excites me. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to take you back a step, because you are brave enough and willing for us to share with today so that people can get a spot. And we just spoke a little before the camera started. I think in this world, everybody is moving towards wherever you can have relatability, you know, and elitism is purely for elitism.
Sure.
You know, I think we personally always target the everyday man, and the everyday man, you know, is the man that gets up, does his work incredibly well.
Yeah.
There's some incredible successful business people that walk in this morning and they won't have that aura of elitism around them. But those are the people you relate to, you learn from. But I just want to take you back a little bit on the golf journey. And I want viewers to stay with us on this one, because they're going to learn a lot. They're going to be very relatable to their kids' own journeys that are going through at the moment. Yep. But you started your professional career, I think you turned in 2002 or 7.
2004.
2004, yeah. You turned pro.
Yeah.
Okay, so just take me a little bit through that journey and how you got towards the top form, and then we'll talk about the other side of it.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to go a little bit further back.
Okay.
At the age of 12, I came down with a serious knee injury, and I was meant to go to Michael House and for a sports scholarship, and cricket was my first love.
Okay.
And I got this disease called osteochondritis dissecans, and I had Osgood Schlatter's disease, when you grow too quickly and your
so you went on the juice so far too early.
So my joints and everything were stuffed, and I was told I'll never play any contact sports again. And my mom was like to the doctors, well, what can he do? You know, sports is his life. That was my first traumatic experience. Gotcha. Because put me in a classroom, I hated it. I spent more time outside the classroom because I was causing shit inside. And all I wanted to do was be on a sports field. And when they told me this, you know, I was just like, anything, I'll do anything. And the doc said, Anton, you can play golf, but you're going to need a golf cart. And you cannot walk, you cannot run, because we need to get this sorted out. So they put a cast on my leg for 6 months to stop me, because I mean, how can you tell a kid not to run and go and do things like that? And that 6 months, even with,
felt like eternity.
Even with the cast on, I was still running around bowling in the nets, but I wasn't able to actually, you know, put a lot of pressure on there. And then that kind of fixed up, and I mean, my grandmother played golf for South Africa, and I kind of had a love for it when I was six. I mean, I hit a ball miles, but it wasn't there. And then I started playing, and literally within 2 years, I was a scratch handicap. I mean, at 12, I was scratch, and got my, you know, Jimmy Cook. I was in the Jimmy Cook Cricket Academy.
That's the one in KZN?
No, it's based in Johannesburg.
I think he had another one.
But he used to come to White and Mpumalanga side. Okay. So he'd bring the academy guys and compete against us in White River.
Okay.
And I played golf with him. I think I shot 69 that day. And he said, Anton, put your cricket gear away and focus on golf. And that's what I did. And I was at boarding school at Uplands College. And I literally used to ride. I used to put my clubs on my back, and I used to ride 10Ks to the golf course with my clubs, practice the whole day, ride back. And that's what I did every day. I mean, day in, day out. I mean, I worked hard because that's the only thing I could do. And I wanted,
in your mind, towards professionalism?
Well, I mean, at that stage, you know, you don't know what you want to do. But I excelled very quickly. I mean, 14, we moved up to Johannesburg. I got my South African colors. I represented South Africa and Mexico with Shoal, and traveled the world, you know, playing for South Africa, and played in the junior world. And then at 16, I was playing an interprovincial under 23s, and we were playing touch rugby after a couple castles.
That's also 6 days or 36 holes.
Yeah.
And then you still decide to play touch rugby.
And we were, I mean, I'm 16. You don't get tired at that age. And we decided to play touch rugby after about 8 beers. And Dave Hewen decided, no, he's not gonna touch me. He's gonna go at me. And he grabbed me from behind, and my leg got stuck in the ground, and I just felt something go in my knee. Cut a long story short, I'd ripped both my tendons in my knee, and I was meant to go and represent South Africa in Japan. Had to withdraw from that, and that was a year out. That was a big blow to my system yet again, and that's kind of where the first massive injury occurred, because I was planning on turning pro and really taking golf seriously. But yeah, I did my rehab correctly, and then 18 decided, you know, turn pro. And everyone was like, Anton, too early, rather go to college, go and do this. Central Gauteng guys were like, no, just trust me, it's too early to turn. And I went against it. I signed up with International Sports Management, Chubby Chandler and his stable. And within, you know, a year, I'd won 2 tournaments in South Africa. I think I won my first event as a pro at Daneford Country Club, which is the Seekers Pro-Am. And I beat Nick Henning in a playoff there. And then from there, went over to Asia, got my Asian tour card. And then won the Malaysian Open and the Namibian Open the next week. And then, 20 came, and then won the Johnny Walker. So I won 4 big tournaments within 2 years, and my career shot off. I had endorsements all over the place, more money than I'd ever seen in my life coming in. From there, things got messy.
Yeah, but take us through that.
Things got messy. I mean,
I think too, you got too dramatic, because they say a kid, when they experience that type of trauma you sort of stay in that personality. You don't really grow any further.
Yeah.
And Anton, I'm not a big philosopher, but there's so many studies that prove that when a kid...
Childhood trauma is huge.
At 14, it's sort of, they don't really grow.
Yeah.
And only the growth comes after, like, years and decades after that. Yeah. So you now start of the career, you go against advice probably from a lot of people that love you around you.
Yeah.
Which we all go through that phase, you know, the rebel phase. You go into it, you have incredible success immediately. Take us from there.
So I mean, my contracts with Callaway, Audemars Piguet,
Didn't you have a Hugo Boss thing going?
Yeah, I mean, I had, at the time, Lyle and Scott. I did a lot of shoots for Trendy Golf. I did some modeling for them, and Hugo Boss, they gave me some clothing too. So I had all the bells and whistles. I mean, I was with Callaway for a good period of time. And then at 21, I had my first hip problem. I went to go and see Dr. Karchek here at Four Ways Life, and they did x-rays, and I mean, I was battling with my hip pain. I was sore. I was in the physio rooms all the time, and they said, Anton, you need to go and check it out, because, you know, we've done what we can. And I mean, I was taking 5 Cataflams a day, 10 Miprodols. I mean, I was floating. I mean, in a daze most of the time, just trying to numb this pain. Had the x-rays, bad news. You've got labrum tears, and your femur that fits inside the hip socket is too big. And it was touching bone. I mean, I'd worn out the labrum, so it was bone on bone. And the agony, I couldn't even walk without it pinching. And, I had my first hip op, out for another year. So from playing extremely well to now... another big incident with injury.
Losing rhythm.
And that kind of just happened over and over. And it wasn't it was both hips. Hey? So I had, they had to do the one first because they can't do both because you need to be able to walk. And
okay.
So I said, do them both. They said, no, we can't. We can only do one at a time. So it was 1 year out, getting the one right, and then another one back to back. And so, yeah, 2 years of recovery, trying to get back into golf, and it took a long time for me to get into the flow of things again. And with the depression, I started drinking, I started partying, I started mixing with the wrong crowds because I was depressed, man.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I just wanted to be on the golf course, making money, playing, competing. I missed that. And from all of that to being at home, I was bored stiff and, started really drinking heavily, using drugs. And then once I had recovered from those ops and I got back playing, it took a hell of a long time for me to get back into the flow of things again. And I lost my tour card on the European Tour in 2010. Went back to tour school, managed to get it back at tour school. But in this period, I was drinking, partying. You know, I was just not a happy camper. I had too much money too soon. You know, it was my parents. I had a very strict upbringing. And then having all this money and being able to do whatever I liked kind of just caught me too quickly. And I just had the fear of missing out. So if guys missed the cut on the weekend, even if I was doing well, I mean, I would still go out and get pissed. And this caught up very quickly with me. And then I think about 2 years after that, I had to go in for my third hip hop. And then the doc said to me, Anton, your body is not going to withstand a long career in golf. And this is where my heart sank into my chest. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, my life's done. Because I didn't finish school. I didn't get a matric. I didn't have any backing to fall on. And I literally said to myself, I'm going to jaw until I kill myself. That's where I was. And I literally tried every drug under the sun except heroin. I was too bung to put needles into my veins, but I did everything. And towards the latter end of my using, I was on crystal meth for 6 months for every day I used. Holy, I think I slept shit. One day a week. One day. I used to jaw 6 days, dos, wake up, repeat, 6 months. I went from 90 kilograms to 75 in 6 months.
That's what I am now.
I was skin and bone. I was lost. And what saved me is I ran out of money. And I'll never forget, I had a huge fight with my mom. And she said, you're no longer my child. I don't want anything to do with you. Because I'd hurt them that much. Of course, I had pushed everyone away. I was... When people say rock bottom, they don't realize what rock bottom is. Mm-hmm. It's everyone around you doesn't want a thing to do with you. You can't make one phone call and someone answers. That's how much I destroyed my relationships around me. And funnily enough, I phoned up my pastor, Rory Dyer, who had just come into my life 3 months before because my mom had asked him, saying, I'm worried about my son. Please, can you help him? And I phoned Rory up and I said, Rors, I'm going to kill myself. Can you get me into a treatment center? And literally he drove to my house. He stayed there the night with me. He phoned up a couple people. And when I woke up in the morning, he had booked a flight. I was off to South Coast Recovery for what I thought was a month, and ended up turning out to be a year.
A year in recovery.
I spent a year in rehab. Let me tell you, the first 2 months I took it as a holiday. I thought, you know, I'm going to use again, but yes, I was still so high and in a bloody cloud for so long that, you know, my program only started after about 3 months. I mean, I caught so much crap in there. Yeah, I was hitting on girls. I was fighting. I even tried to escape a few times and they had to come and find me. And I was a nut job, man. And then 3 months into the program, after seeing counselors every day, working with psychologists, I decided, you know what? I need to give this a go because I'm so unhappy as is. I think I cried for 6 months while I was there. I mean, I was broken, man. So lost. I had a lot of childhood trauma that I had to get through. I was molested when I was 10. I had a lot of shit happen to me, and especially in boarding school, you get bullied. I mean, especially Afrikaans area. Yeah. Yes, we got luxumed. When I say hockey sticks, they'd come into our rooms at night, beat us with bats. I mean, it was an experience, let me tell you. It really, and if you told your folks what was going on, they made life even worse. So I had to, you know, let go of a lot of stuff, come to realization that all this stuff was holding me back as an individual. And I decided to go, okay, I'm going to give this program a full shot. And I'm so happy I did, because I'm probably in the happiest space I've ever been in, because now I understand I can mix my heart and my head together. I can understand if I'm anxious, shucks, what's making me anxious? I didn't know how to. I was an emotional kid. You know, when you start using drugs, I mean, at the age of 14, I had my first joint, and I think I smoked Zol from 14 until 20 every day of my life. You actually don't grow emotionally. You're stuck. And I mean, when I used to lose my temper, I would act like a 14-year-old. I'd break shit, I would throw things around and throw temper tantrums to get my way. And in rehab, you threw a temper tantrum, they would give you pages. You'd write, "I will not swear a thousand times." And I mean, they treated you like a kid. And I was like, guys, what the fuck is going on here? You're treating me like a child. Well, they said, you are a child. You can't, you know, you can't abide to the rules we've given you. Simple rules. Don't swear. Don't hit on the woman. Get up, make your bed. Simple stuff, which I didn't know how to do. And it was the biggest blessing of my life, understanding who I was again. I mean, the first question they asked me in rehab, "Who are you?" And for the first time, I couldn't answer. Without golf, without your finances, without any of your achievements, who are you? And I was, I said, "I don't know." And the counselor said, "Awesome. We've got a place to start, don't we?" And I'll never forget that. Mark Dixon Seeger, who was my counselor at the time, I mean, he brought me closer to God. And, you know, I'd come back from a very religious background. Mm. And it kind of chased me away from that. I wanted to rebel. I mean, it's you know, normal. Remember when you were younger, it was very old school. Very. You'd sing to the piano, completely. And it was boring stuff, very, you know? Very.
And you were a sheep. You must be like a sheep.
You must do this. And
I remember when I was this big, because my parents are Afrikaans, so we went to an Afrikaans church. I didn't understand a word. Because that Afrikaans Bible in Kerk is words you've never heard of in your life.
You know what I'm saying? Such an imperfect church group themselves. With so many mistakes.
And so many rules.
Very judgmental. Very judgmental.
But anyway, let's go back to...
Very judgmental. There's a saying I absolutely love, is to lead by empathy and curiosity rather than judgment.
Yes.
And I personally, you know, just like you, Anton, I think we all went on a bit of a journey with religion. Mm. But I'm at a place where if you have that type of tone on judgment with me, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you.
Exactly.
You keep your own little judgment for yourself. I'll do my own little thing. And we are all equal, you know.
And religion causes a lot of shit these days. You know, because the Bible says you need to do this, and then another religion says no, this.
Yeah.
And it causes a lot of turmoil in our world today. But for me, I love the Bible where, you know, you stick to the commandments. Yeah. You treat your neighbor as yourself.
Yeah.
Just be good. Just be kind. Show love where you can. Because people are going through... I mean, we're living in an environment today where the world is tough.
Yeah.
It's at its toughest.
Yeah.
And to bring kids up in this environment now is brutally hard. Yeah. I mean, the world has changed.
Yeah.
It's not the same as it used to be. It's not safe because people are jobless.
Yeah.
It's... I mean, if I had kids and I didn't have a job, would I steal and go out there to provide? Yeah. Shucks, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd do whatever it takes to keep my family alive.
Yeah.
Mm.
And yeah, it's tough to live in South Africa too, because, you know, it's you're fighting battles all the time, and there's racism and there's this and there's that. And I just try and do a good deed for someone every day. And the religion side for me, I go to church because I've got this animal inside of me. I've got you. Every now and then, I mean, I haven't had a dope or drug in 16 months.
Yeah.
And every now it flares up and I'll be like, my ego says, you can have a dope now. Yeah. Surely, you know, you've proved it.
Yeah.
And, you know, after I came out of rehab, I did a 4-year stint without anything. And after 4 years, you know,
You've done it.
I'm not an addict anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I had to go through that process where I realized very quickly after I had a few drinks, it wasn't just a few drinks.
Yeah.
It was a shitload of drinks. Yeah. And then, you know, took drugs again. And I mean, painkillers and, you know, it. I'm an addict.
Yeah.
I'm an addict. I cannot do anything in balance. I'm trying hard, but I've got to go to church for my own sake because I need something else higher than me.
Yeah.
You know, if I think I'm God and I can take on all the stress and anxiety of this world today, I'm finished.
Yeah.
Going back to what I was saying, sure. I think it's a crucial thing bringing up kids with religion and let's call it planting the seed softly and not forcing you to do what you need to do too early and make it a deed or make it a, you know, forced upon, you know.
It should never be forced upon.
Yeah. I think it should be very natural. You do your natural things and we'll get to a point in time where they start committing themselves.
Yeah.
Than the other way around, because sometimes you're too young to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Immaturity.
Yeah.
You know, you go to church at 5-6 years old, your brain's not even developed yet.
You don't know what you're actually looking at the sweet shop
on the way out. That's what you're thinking.
I think it's important as a parent to give the kid a platform to choose from when he's on the foundation. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, like, if I had to have kids with my missus is Jewish and I'm Christian and my kids will be Jewish, you know, because they take their mother's heritage.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
but, you know, for me, I would give them a Christian environment and I would say, no, you're going to go to shul.
Yeah.
And give them, you know, it's up to us to not force it, but show them, like, you've got to live that way. You've got to live with kindness, show love.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big job, hey, and that's why I haven't had kids yet, because I want to get into a place where I can look after myself, and financially get to a place where, you know, I want to give them everything I possibly can, and until I'm in a secure place within my own abilities, I will not have children, because I don't want my kids growing up in an environment where they're struggling, they don't have a good role model to look up to.
Anton, it's so true what you both said there. I just find it difficult, and I still struggle with it at 42 years old today, that I know you know, I think we were naive when we were younger. Mm. People are imperfect. Yeah. They've always got stories yeah. behind it. And I just struggle with, you're going to pass judgment onto me. Mm. I, you know, Tammy and I try and put the foundations there and let the God take that journey mm. with the kid. Because,
yeah.
Anton, I've got that inner animal into yeah. in me too. I promise you now, today is not my story, but I think we can all relate
yeah. Yeah.
that we have this, and I definitely also have an addictive personality. Mm. And I'm so glad that it's going this direction. I'm so glad you're dealing with us mm. on such a deep level mm. with it. But I think what we're just trying to say to people is that there's a massive world navigation.
Yeah.
Don't be too harsh on yourself.
Yeah.
You know, but we also have to put faith in God mm. if we believe in God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think between all religions, there's a core central of it, of love and kindness and
yeah.
peace
yeah.
and wanting to treat each other with love and respect.
Yeah.
But there's always a far left and a far right. That exactly. gets involved and takes that to extreme, and that's what gets the attention,
yes.
which is mm. then what creates the perception.
Yeah.
But actually, in between all of that craziness, there's just some normal people trying to survive.
Yeah.
You know, like a duck with his feet is running, and at the bottom we try to be as smooth as possible.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. that's yeah. just normal.
Yeah.
So then you, I mean, can I ask, I mean, what type of guilt and regret do you have in your heart today?
The hardest thing for me is realizing how many people are hurt along the way. You know, they say on average you affect 69 people around you. I would say it's a lot more with me. My friendship circles were massive because I was such a chameleon, you know. I would have that group to draw with.
Friendships,
I broke a lot of friendships. I broke families. And then introducing people to drugs for the first time. And now they hooked on drugs. So I've hurt a lot of people. And that, for me, is like, it still cuts me to this day because I've tried to make amends with a few people. And they say it's fine, but I know it's not. You know, I'm living with that shame and guilt. I wish I'd put my money in investments and looked after that. But I'm glad that, you know, it came very easily to me when I was younger. Now I'm having to realize I'm working probably the hardest I've ever worked in my life, and I'm making peanuts compared to what I used to make. But it's made me fight. It's made me realize that life is not easy.
It's normalized you.
It's normalized me. It's taken that ego yeah. of mine yeah. and squashed it to yeah. the point
yeah.
where
yeah.
I had to build myself up again because I wanted to kill myself. That's yeah. how bad it got. I didn't have the trigger. I didn't have the balls to put a gun to my yeah. head, so I thought drugs was going to do it. And thank you, Jesus, that I'm still alive today, because he's got a plan for me. And instead of, you know, people calling me for a jaw, they're calling me for advice now.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had a couple mates call me to come and join me at meetings. There's no better feeling being able to get is when someone phones you and he says, Anton, thank you so, so much for getting me to where I am today. I'm so grateful. Instead of like, you fucked my life
up.
All you used me, this, you were a selfish asshole. And now people actually want you around because your aura, your personality, it's all about love and care and showing others that you can be loved without getting something from someone, you know? And it's taken me a long time to get there. And I've got an incredible family who's backed me through thick and thin. My poor mom and dad went through hell. And now my life's all about, you know, giving back, being a part of a family again. And I've got an incredible girlfriend who's had my back. And I love her family. And I'm blessed to be in this seat today. I really am. I should be dead. I should be dead.
Yeah.
But God had a plan for me, and I really just want to help people. And I think having a platform like this where I can share my story and help those pros who are turning pro not knowing what they're going to hit when they hit the top, because no human is designed for fame and fortune. I can tell you that. Yeah. And if you don't know who you are as a person and you've got shit that you haven't dealt with, put some money in that. And then that wild creature comes out, and before you know it, you're hooked like I was.
I've got 2 points. I think just listening to this whole journey, first point is God had a plan for you. I think it was a flipping rocky road. I think
the plan is coming still.
The plan is still coming because he's doing what he needs to do now, helping others, and it was a rocky road, but I think your journey is only just starting, let's call it.
Yeah.
And number two, he's not a selfish person that he was whenever that period was, because you asked, what do you regret? And some people would have said, I regret not putting my money away, or
I should have still been a sponsor.
Do you know what I'm saying? That answer that you just said says it all for me.
But Anton, I still find at 42, we all have regrets, and but I still find some weeks I feel I've got it figured out. But then I find myself in another week. And not so long ago, I had a moment. I'm an early riser. I've always been in my life. But I woke up and I just went straight back to bed 5 minutes later and slept for another hour. And I just thought to myself, shit, I just don't feel like life right now. Are you any different, or do you still find yourself?
For me, the hardest thing is, because I don't drink, I cannot escape. I don't have something to escape from life.
Gotcha.
So if I don't deal with what's going on for me, I stay stuck in that place. And that's why I do NAA meetings. I take people through the program. The NAA program should be at schools. It is the most incredible program designed and to get you to a place of, who am I? The questions are so beautifully designed to bring out your character defects, know exactly what's happening in your life. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful program, and it's free. I mean, I've been to psychologists. I've been to psychiatrists. My mom even took me to a crystal healer.
Yeah.
She was that desperate. I mean, the guy said, if you pay me 20,000 rand, I'll remove your demons. And I looked at him and I said, get fucked, bro. I stood up and I walked out. I mean, that's how desperate my mom was. And then I find this program, and everyone from different walks of life come in there. I mean, there's guys there that I would never hang around.
Yeah.
If I was using.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
All walks of life. And we all come and sit in that circle with one thing that we all struggle with, addiction.
Yeah.
And we can open up and talk from a real place. You know, when you go and see people outside, how are you? No, I'm okay, I'm great, how are you?
Yeah.
And that's all you get.
That's all you do, yeah.
There you go, how are you doing? Yes, I'm battling with, my relationships with my folks. It's, this poor girl the other night opened up and shared that, she was raped when she was younger. And then after that, it's amazing how the circle just works. And somebody came out and said, I was molested. And it's so real. There's no bullshit there. Mm-hmm. And it's a platform and a safe place where we can all meet up. And I've formed some very, very good relationships with the guys there. And I'm part of the service team. And service keeps you clean. You know, it's a cliche, but it does, because when you put someone else in front of you and help someone else, it makes you feel better.
100%.
And the more you do that,
the more it reflects.
One of my goals was, like, because I was such a shit boyfriend to my current girlfriend, I'm like, I'm going to do things even when I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, when you're tired and you're like, fuck, I don't feel like getting out of bed.
Yeah.
I don't feel like doing anything.
Skip it for tomorrow.
I go and do it anyway.
Yeah.
I sit down and I write down what's going on for me. You know, it's so important to do journals. And just in the mornings, I wake up, I listen to a bit of praise and worship just to get my day going. And I thank God. Mm. And I, you know, gratitude, you've got to practice gratitude. Gratitude doesn't just come your way.
But it makes your day better if you take a moment in the morning for it.
Gratitude for the smallest things.
Yeah.
Like my missus and I, we do a little gratitude list every now and then and say what we're grateful for. And I said, I'm grateful for a bed. I'm grateful for food in my belly. We, you know, social media is so... So
it's a fucked up place.
It's a horrible yeah. place yeah. to be, because they say you need to be like this
yeah.
to be happy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, those people are yeah. miserable.
Yeah. And yeah. you look at people's and social fake. Media Instagrams, and it's smiling, and I'm yeah. here, and I'm yeah. there, and it's such a load of shit. And if you can focus on the small things and be grateful for the small things, justice. Because I mean, gratitude is the shortest lived emotion.
Yeah.
And if you're not grateful, that's when the problems start. Like I find myself saying, I want a new car and I want a bigger house and it's this. Yeah, I need to make more money.
Yeah.
And whenever, like money is a huge stress for all of us.
Yeah.
Like we need to look after our families. We need to, you know, if I want to get married one day, I need to be able to show my missus that I can financially look after her.
Yeah.
So I find that when I start chasing money, it doesn't come my way. It really doesn't. And I become a nasty individual when I'm money driven.
You're desperate.
It's an addiction in itself. You're chasing to, you know, and instead of just like trusting the process, because I know I'm a good person now. I know that from the insides, I know I am a good person. And I try and help people, and coaching when I'm dealing with the kids, you know, some kids cry because this game is hard, but they cry because they can't hit the ball. Now I've got to try and be there for this kid to say, hey, I'll even get up and I'll hit a shot and I'll hit a cuck shot. Just on purpose. See,
it helps.
You see, I even hit bad shots. Yeah. And then, you know, to try and get kids loving this game, it's a challenge, man. Yeah. Because some kids pick it up like this, and some kids are like this, and man, I love working with kids. I think it's, and they pick it up so quickly, you know, and I can see if a parent is pushing them into golf, or if they're there because they want to be there, and yeah, it's a beautiful journey that I'm on, because like, the end goal is I want to be involved in golf. Coaching, I'm capped.
Yeah.
You know, I'm selling my time. Yeah. I feel I've got more to give. I want to do golf tours. I want to get involved in management. I've got such big plans, but I'm yet to find someone who sees the vision with me, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. And I've got to say well done to myself, because 2 years ago I stopped playing golf. I wasn't making an income. I didn't know what I wanted to do. Started drinking heavily because I thought, oh my God, my life's stuffed again.
Yeah.
And my house is paid off. I make a decent salary. I can live off it. The tax is another story. the tax caught me. But, you know, I'm learning how to be an adult for the first time in my life, and adulting is hard.
Yeah.
90% work, 10% fun.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got 1% fun.
No, every day feels like a Monday. And I went to see my life coach the other day, and she said, Anton, what do you do for fun? I said, nothing.
Yeah.
I don't. I just work.
Yeah.
I work because I want to get my business up and running. Yeah. And she said, it's dangerous, my boy.
Yeah.
If you're not enjoying life and enjoying the processes of life, may it just be going out and watching a movie, go and play a bit of paddle. But I'm so scared of getting injured. You know, my back is so fickle.
You won't last.
Yeah.
And my mind goes, let's buy a motorbike. And I'm like, I will kill myself on that.
Yeah.
you know, and then I might never walk again.
Yeah. I think he's going through a midlife crisis. He needs a child in his
life. Yeah, he needs a child. I think, to be honest with you, I think the timing
the
is
timing
now.
The timing is right. Now, right?
It's not up to me.
My fun is getting home and seeing your child.
Yeah, that must be a bit of
the best feeling in the world. Yeah. That's my fun the moment. So...
But we mustn't, you know, I think it's a good message from all of us, you know, that are trying to still figure out adulting. Mm. I'm certainly not there where I can tell you I've got it figured out. Yep. So I wish I can give you great advice on that. But I think most importantly, you know, when you said something about, you both spoke about social media, just hear me out on the context. When I do, you know, I'm now in a position a little bit that people would phone me maybe for some business advice, and I always warn them that I'm not very qualified at it.
Yeah.
But don't show me the vehicle you bought. Show me the factory you built.
Yeah.
But what we do in society, it's the end result.
Yeah.
Instead of being inspired, like, what did you have to do in order to do what you do today?
Yeah.
And then we also see success with, oh, did you see his car in the parking lot?
Yeah.
Anton, you have to understand that's a world we've all created and sometimes lives fakely in that world, because the real successful people don't live in that same world.
Yeah.
They were in a world where my Bucky's still working perfectly fine after 10 years.
Yeah.
It's got 200,000 kilometers on it.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure why I need to change it.
Yeah.
And the only reason I could think of is that I would have the same reaction from people saying, oh, did you see my new vehicle in my parking lot?
It's more an ego thing, right?
It's a completely ego thing for me. Yeah. And I just have been fortunate enough, and I think Arthur has the same philosophy in many ways. When I started to say, I'm not going to do business with you because of who you are.
Yes.
Things changed.
Yeah.
When I had principled business, when we wanted to rather work with people that's kind and we can enjoy each other, the money became different.
Sure.
Than when we wanted to grab every arsehole's buck that offered it.
Yeah.
So I think you are an incredible bleak inspiration. I'm so glad that you are so open about everything. Because Anton, it tells us you're in a good place. Mm. And I think that you're going to have an incredible, successful business. I think you've got the talent for it. You've got the personality for it. And everybody that deals with you, when you supported us in the golf room opening as well, you just did it. Mm. So I can tell people everything you say today is exactly what you live.
Mm.
And it's you can see it with comments online from you. You can see it with the people that you're coaching. I'm incredibly... inspired and very proud, and I know I don't mean that in a dad position, but you've inspired me also to keep that devil, that inner animal that I've got, you know, pushed to the ground.
I think at the end of the day, you know, people think going and seeing a psychologist or a life coach is weakness.
Yeah.
That's a big stigmatism, you know, especially with males.
Like us, we are, our role in life is to be strong, protect, make the money,
and
show no weakness.
Yeah.
No matter what.
No emotion.
Yeah.
I promise you now, for me, I love going to therapy because I can talk and let everything out and walk out of there with everything off my chest. You know, when you're holding on to secrets, when my mates come up to me and say, can you keep a secret? I say, rather don't tell me because I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Can you imagine your friend says to you now, well, I stabbed someone or I killed someone. Yeah. I don't want to carry that because I will go and tell the police.
Yeah.
That's who I am. My morals and values are that way.
Yeah.
Don't tell me secrets because I want to... I wear my heart on my sleeve. Yeah. I will open up because I've done a lot of soul searching and I've turned every stone upside down.
Yeah.
And I've brought everything to light because that's where you grow.
Yeah.
You understand, okay, those are my character defects. I'm codependent. I like affirmation. So what I'll do is I will step out of my comfort zone, act in a way, swear a bit more to get attention.
Yeah.
It's like... I know when my character defects start popping up and I'm able to identify it with it quickly and realize that I'm actually seeking affirmation, because we all love affirmation. Yeah. We like to be noticed. Yeah. We like to see
acknowledged.
And that's it. And therapy for me is a must. Yeah. I think it's a crucial aspect of life because, you know, you don't know the answers. And if you think you do, you fucked. Yeah. Excuse my language. No, I don't like swearing. Yeah. But yeah. If you think you can do life alone and keep all your thoughts and emotions to yourself, you're going to be a very unhappy person.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
And it's not going to work out that
way. No. The devil will get you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Anton, it's three boys here speaking about quite deep stuff this morning, which I think individually we all struggle with.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing all of that. There was some big trauma you spoke about in your childhood when you were 10 years old. We didn't just flush past that.
Yeah.
I think it's just an awkward conversation or an awkward topic. But we do say congratulations on making it through this breaking point. And like you say, there's still things you're figuring out.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the possibilities that's ahead of you. And I want to just switch the tone a little bit if you guys don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
This dream of where your vision for golf is going to go.
Yeah.
I want to coach from you today. I want to lesson with you. I want to make contact with you. Mm. What is the sort of Anton Hague experience when it comes to coaching?
For me, it's, you know, being technical in this game, golf books are like this. They're thick.
Yeah.
There are so many moving parts. There's so many drills to do. I try and keep it as simple as possible. I try and get your body moving correctly to the ball. And if you can't hit the ball when the body's moving correctly, then we tweak a few things. So for me, I work primarily on getting a good setup, getting athletic to the ball, and keeping it simple because I know that when I'm on the golf course and I'm thinking swing.
Five different things.
Finished.
Done.
Yeah.
Shanks.
Yeah.
I mean, I've hit it all.
Yeah.
So for me, make this game easier. Make it simple. Give good body explanations. I've had 10 operations. My body doesn't turn like it used to.
Yeah.
I've found ways to turn better by moving the body better. So I'm all about fitness. I love, my missus is in nutrition. She does meal plans and things like that. And we want to start up something pretty cool where people come to us. Would you like a meal plan? Would you like a gym program? So it's not just golf related, you know. But the coaching is my primary business. My brother's always told me, do what you're good at first.
Yeah.
And then build on elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I love fitness. I love golf, and staying healthy.
Yeah,
and that's primarily where my coaching is. I try and give advice. If you're a client of mine, I'm always thinking about you. I'll go into Instagram, find a gym program
that
video that could be quite good for a feel for this person, and I send it to them. You can ask all my clients. I'm like that. I've got a group where I post videos of body rotation or just giving tips every now and then because I can. I'm not there just to take your money. I'm there to be engage with you. I'm there to help you and give you the best advice I can because I made it. I did quite well in my career and I know how to get there.
Yeah.
It's just my body's, you know, had its day. Yeah. And am I going to play again? I don't know. But right now my focus is not on playing. It's getting the coaching right and getting this academy up and running.
Tell me, I mean, I don't want you to spill too many beans, but estate golfing and coaching in an estate, we all know that in these estates it can get quite hectic. There's 17 opinions about one matter. Do you find it challenging because you were at an independent range before this, now a while back, but do you find it challenging?
Well, the independent range wasn't a very good range.
It wasn't.
It didn't have a short game facility. No. I literally had.
Can you hitting off mats?
I had the Dimension.
Yeah, mats,
I had the Dimension Data Campus.
Okay.
So I'd do short game there.
Okay.
And then obviously long game. So it was tough for me.
Yeah.
Estate golf is great in a way because you've always got feet coming
catch
in there.
The audience,
But where you have your tricky parts is like you've got the homeowners association, then you've got the golf committee, and you know the homeowners is actually what carries the golf course, and most of the homeowners don't play golf, so their levies go up and then they complain. And what they don't realize is that if the golf course is not great, property goes down.
Yeah.
Do you know what the government could do? Topgolf.
Yeah.
Can you imagine government built three Topgolf things around the country?
Yeah.
And yes, it would do this kind. I mean, those ranges would. I mean, they're big money. Yeah, I mean, what we're looking at to put a TrackMan in
Hot
each
is doing very
$40 million US
for a range.
Yeah. No, to do a Topgolf simulator.
But that's 40. Brand loyalty, brand equity that you're paying for.
You see, no one wants to invest that money in South Africa because we don't know what's going on. But can you imagine the government said, "Well, okay, we'll do it."
Yeah.
I promise you, they'll make more money on that.
They
won't have to take our taxes.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. No, I agree. And I think the new GNU is definitely a big part of it is sports focus.
Yeah.
And I hope it does. You know, it's still early days.
Yeah.
But I'm inspired. I've got hope. You know, and when hope gets created, that leads to a more stimulated economy for everybody.
Yeah.
Just before elections, the retail dipped incredibly, 25%.
Yeah.
And that's a collapse in many ways.
Yeah.
And when hope was recovered after the elections and everybody felt a little bit more hopeful, it automatically recovered. Because at the end of it, we speak about it this morning. We're all just human beings.
Yeah.
And we are affected by all these things in small little ways. But collectively, if we all have hope, we inspire the other hope, and that also turns into a better economy.
100%.
I just wanted to ask you, so you've got a lot of dreams for yourself. I'm glad you're taking it face by face at the moment. You're currently sitting at the coaching site on Danefin. And you've touched on it a little bit, but do you really see yourself playing professional golf again with the state of your body? And I don't mean the state of the outlook.
I'm
talking more the inner stuff.
You know what it is? I've still got seniors to play.
Yeah.
That's in 12 years' time.
Yeah.
For me, it's not like, do I have to play again? I just miss competing.
Okay.
I miss getting out there.
And
then seeing Jared Harvey every now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a character. You know, there's some great guys on that tour. And I miss the camaraderie. I miss traveling a bit.
Yes.
I don't miss the accommodation that we used to stay in.
All the
When you're a struggling golfer.
Yeah, the garages.
Listen, it can get ugly there. But I do miss playing.
Yeah.
I miss that competitiveness, preparing mentally for an event.
Yeah.
I can comment on that as well. I'm playing some of the best golf I've ever played right now.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
Yeah.
But my body doesn't feel like it doesn't move the way it wants to.
We're not 20 anymore.
Yeah. I can go shoot a 64 one day.
Yeah, but can I
play 4 days?
Yeah.
Not can I...
and back to back.
Can I play 4 days and be okay afterwards?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah.
I can play 4 days, but you know what I'm saying. So every professional sportsman, athlete, golfer, whatever you call it, there's always parts that they will miss and parts that they don't miss.
Yeah.
But that competing, being around with a good bunch of guys, competing
and
against
them. You'll know it. It's like being away from your family. That's what I hated.
Yeah.
You know, you're always away.
Yeah.
And it's like this, you actually start resenting golf in a way.
Yeah.
I actually was like, fuck golf.
Yeah.
It's making me so unhappy.
Yeah.
It turned me to drinking and drugs. It was like, yes, if you don't have a life outside of golf and you live it, eat it, sleep it every day in a day out,
eventually
it will break you. It will.
And I think,
but you will, yeah.
And I think just listening for the last hour or so, he's just started with his things.
Yeah.
But I would want you to, the junior golfers, the 16, the 14, the 12-year-olds, if they are those serious golfers that want to turn pro and go to college and have a good baseline to get wet, he's the perfect example.
I completely agree.
Because he's done the good, the bad, the ugly, the everything. He knows everything.
Yeah.
He knows all the life lessons.
Yeah.
Golf RSA, They need someone who can literally look after some people, FYI.
Yeah.
Because he will know, he will be able to see if a kid's not doing what they need to do.
I'll know if a kid is smoked a joint.
Yeah. Or bullshitting. Well, not even that, just bullshitting. 100%. Did you do your mental prep? You can look at them straight in the eye. Didn't do my mental shit.
No. I was certainly no angel as well. We will catch that quickly.
There's things coming for you that you can focus on as well. And I would put my kid with you if he was traveling around the world or doing stuff for serious tournaments.
Yeah.
I'd put him with my kid. I'll tell you that.
For you guys, and just before we end on that side, but just want to speak to you guys on, just give me your insights quickly on the Sunshine Tour. Yesterday, I played in a golf day. Chanel, which is one of the ladies' pros, she said that Standard Bank has pulled out of the ladies' tours. Do you guys know anything about that? So the tournament's apparently gone.
That's the unfortunate part with the ladies' Sunshine Tour, let's call it. Maybe I don't follow it, so I don't see it on Instagram, but I don't see much going on. They do their posts on Supersport now and again.
Yeah.
But I think there's something missing in the country with the ladies. Do you know what I'm saying?
Because I really do feel for the ladies because, you know,
I mean, look at Stacey Bregman, for example, Nicole Gossier, couple. I mean, they've been grinding at this thing. I remember when I was 18 years old, Stacey was someone to look up to. Yeah. And she's still doing the same thing.
She's still a hard worker, grinder, CCJ.
What a good person. So
I honestly think the women need more opportunity in this country. I 100%. Think it's...
Ashley Buai won the British Open.
Yeah.
We've got good ladies in this country.
Yeah.
They just don't have the opportunity.
I'll tell you exactly. It's I know a couple of the ladies. They are having to work two jobs.
100%.
Their focus is not 100% on golf. They have to go and coach. They have to go and do something on the sidelines. Because if your parents don't have money to help them, that's why the girls don't stay.
And you know what was crazy? Investec used to be such a good support of ladies' golf.
Have they pulled out as well?
I think they have.
But they sponsor Stacey.
I think there's some changes that's come to give
props to Investec. They were consistent for a very long time. And they've done their part.
It's
the other side that hasn't come to the party for it to amalgamate.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? They've been very good. So something needs to happen.
You know what the Sunshine Tour should do? They should have tournaments where the ladies play with them.
They do.
No, they did.
Oh, Island Gate.
Four or five.
And then how does it work? Do they go off of the same tees?
No, it'll be different tees. They do have Die Daughters and other ones.
But five girls?
Sometimes there's more.
I think the Sunshine Tour really needs to look at getting bigger sponsors for the ladies.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I would rather look at a pretty girl than, watch guy golf all the time.
Look at the stuff that Cassandra's doing right now.
Yeah, Cassandra Hall.
I mean, she is a beast, that girl.
Sorry, Cassandra Alexander. Sorry, she got married.
Same.
But same.
Like
but
Ashley Simon, Ashley yeah, 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 yeah. Same.
But I mean, she's a beast.
Yeah. And I mean, recently Charlie Hall, she got called out for smoking on the tour.
But look how much attention.
But hold on, that's what I was going to say to you, Anton. Yeah. Then they try to stop her and give her all sorts of warnings. We're not going to show you on TV. Well, I'm like, to be honest, that went everywhere.
We all related to it.
Yeah. She's the John Daly.
You know, and that other girl.
The bad girl image. And look at the attention she's got.
I take nothing away from her talent, but she's an incredibly good-looking woman.
That's what it is. If you're a good-looking person in sport, you have a huge advantage.
It's just reality.
But it can also be a curse because you get attention.
That attention is a problem.
Back in the day, I had a wandering eye, and let me tell you, I would be leading a tournament, and a hot girl said, come out and have a dope with me.
Yeah.
Bye-bye tournament. I'd go straight there.
100%.
It's tough, man.
It's tough, but I'm telling you now.
But the girls,
I'm not going to say who, but I just want to give a message here because we've interviewed Lejeune lose weight, and then we lost her footage. Literally lost her we didn't lose it, it got corrupted. It got
corrupted, a format or something.
Format or something, and she was incredibly interview. It was such a good interview. Such a good interview
we
with
her. We still owe
her
an interview.
We still owe her an interview. Yeah. But the I felt so not bad, because it wasn't a moment of like, but yesterday a ladies tour player was the beta pro at the golf day. And she said there yesterday, she just, there's no way, she doesn't have money accessible to her. She struggles to get sponsorship, because even from a sponsorship perspective, the only place where I have some relatability, Anton, if there's, the sponsor has to be personal to that person, because the sponsor wants visible return. He wants brand visibility for his sponsorship, you know, and some people do it out of their heart, but some businesses, and in most cases, you want some return for your investment. Sure. There is no platform for it.
Yeah, listen, I mean, if there's no TV coverage,
and if social media isn't big.
Here's the thing, right? It's also a tax write-off.
It is.
Yeah, you get 100,000 rand personally 100,000 every year.
Yeah, correct. To do that. Yeah.
So, why aren't the businesses getting involved?
But the businesses they are involved. You know, guys, but I promise you now, it's easy to sit, but it's as a business sponsorship, it's difficult to always do for everybody, because your heart, you lead with your heart first. Somebody's struggling, you want to help out, or whatever the case might be. But I think the message is that I find the men and women on the tours that do go through these financial challenges, I have incredible empathy for it. And don't judge yourself, and don't let other people judge you. You know, it is incredibly tough. Even with a business that you have, it's incredibly tough to get by these days.
And do you know how motivated you need to be when you're earning nothing?
Yeah.
And to carry on and go against all odds. I take my hat off to these girls. I really do.
Incredible.
It's a... I would love to actually get involved, and maybe, you know what you could do is one day shootouts and raise money money for these ladies to compete and play for more purses.
But you know, Anthem, let's keep ourselves accountable. Let's maybe get some ladies in here with us and let's have a discussion and see what we can do.
We should drive it a little bit, and I think we should push it a little bit. Let's ask some questions.
That's
all we can do. We're not criticizing people, but let's ask the questions and see where it goes.
I don't want to talk out of it, but I want to tell you now. Yesterday I was told that there were people interfering and trying to take limelight and stuff. I mean, I can say it because it's out there. People were interfering. There was people trying to... So that some of the sponsor guys got a little bit annoyed with it. Some of the big guys that's involved with the golf got annoyed with it, so they started to pull out and redirect their money. That was factually yesterday explained to me, and I won't go into the detail as to who those people are, but
people are selfish.
Selfish.
I mean, if you're playing on the men's Sunshine Tour and you're half decent, you see these women have hardly any tournaments, but they've got such a good sponsor, they're probably being selfish. Yeah. If that's how you're explaining
it,
I don't know.
It's exactly how it is there.
But yeah, it's selfishness. I mean...
And golf has got such an incredible reputation for fundraising, you know, helping out where it needs to help. But even big names today, you know, it's difficult always, and I don't judge everybody for where they are. But I think I'm incredibly positive for golf and where it's going to go still. We have South African golfers are nicely on the map at the moment.
I also think the Sunshine Tour is in the best place they've ever been.
Yeah. The money's increased. But remember when we were playing, with 500,000 rand purse for the winter tour.
A million rand purse, 750 purse.
Yeah.
And then you would have a cut of 40.
The cut at Dane Fern was 7 under or something for six, top 40. Under. Yes, it's an easy golf course, but still, the level of golf in this country is mind-blowing. And that's why it's so hard to get a European Tour card, but when the guys get their card, look at them. Look at Tristan.
Tristan,
Ocky Stradam.
Dean at the moment as well.
Dean's a machine. I mean, he hit his 1-9 almost past my driver at St. Francis Links. Yes, I wasn't middling my driver, but that oak is impressive.
Yeah. Mm. But look at where golf is at the moment. You look at the Trump, Bryson DeChambeau video. It physically broke the internet. I think golf content is really where it's moving towards at the moment.
I literally just saw a post on Instagram this morning that people are putting $1 million together for what you call it, golf.
YouTube golf.
YouTube golf. Oh, and content creators golf.
Content creators golf. Mm.
So those guys on YouTube are making a killing.
And it's well, still to this day, the large sponsorship of golf in recent history is YouTube. Mm. All YouTube. Not the number one player in the world.
Well, everyone can afford to watch YouTube. Like, 100%. You don't need a cell phone to watch YouTube.
It's got a TV.
Correct.
Well, everyone's got Wi-Fi in this day and age.
Yeah. But Anton, from your side, I know I'm pushing it now a little bit, but Anton, any parting words from your side or something you want to finish on from your side?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you guys for having me. I think I just want to be a better version of myself, and I hope someone got something out of it today. And I really want to continue coming to this show and talking about the hard stuff and opening up, man. I want to talk like real men. I want to be... I want to know, I want to get to know people, you know. I want to give back and give back to the community, which is something that is important, in, especially in South Africa. You know, this country has been really badly affected, and I just want to do good for it. So, but yeah, but thank you so much for having me today. I've really enjoyed the session with you guys.
Cool. I don't think you've publicly been this public. Can I say that?
Well, definitely not over a microphone, but I think Golfers Digest, I open up quite a bit. In the magazine there. I don't know if you read my article a while back, but yeah, I mean, I'm not scared to talk about the hard stuff. You know, I think I've done a lot of soul searching and I've gone through it. You know, I've really come to terms with the things I've done, and I just don't want people to fall in the same pit that I went down.
Well, Arthur, anything from your side?
I think, thank you to Anton. I didn't think it was going to go that deep. I definitely enjoy these episodes because it affects you as well, because you start questioning things and looking at things differently from someone else's perspective. So thank you for sharing your story.
Pleasure.
You're a good friend. He sends me a lot of his customers. I hope it's because I'm the best, but...
what you're doing, bro.
But I appreciate you as a friend and a person, and you're a legend.
Thanks, buddy.
Definitely. And thanks for all being here.
Yeah, and I think for anybody that's listening here today, thank you that you, with a lot of humility, come and sit here today, talked about the extreme highs and, like I said earlier, the deep lows. And I think what you've just done is humanized yourself, because I think 99%, unless there's a pompous prick on the other side that thinks he's perfect, 99% of people you've inspired today.
100%. You're definitely not just touch one person, but there'll be a lot of people out there. And it's real.
Yeah.
I also love being real.
Yeah.
It's easy to talk from a real place. Yeah. You know, when you're having to lie and...
That's why when you
feel ashamed and talk the truth, because then you don't have to remember your lies.
Yeah.
That's why when he phoned me half an hour before we start, he's like, where are you? I'm like, bro, just, we've got this. You can't be real if you've mentally prepared this for an hour and gone through notes. You've got to go.
Arthur runs on African time.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely African time, this guy. And then he says to me, I can't get hold of you, African time. Well, Anton, from my perspective as well, thank you so much for sitting down in here.
Pleasure, guys.
Thank you for taking the time to do this with us. Guys, this show is in the bleep of things absolutely nothing. It's still very much a passion project and not a financial project for me and you. But what's so incredible, I want to thank everybody that's listening here today. We're still not perfect at this. We're still not the best at this. We're still just normal guys that have a day job that have to squeeze this in. But the watch hours is
doubled
in the last month. And the golf room, which... Thank you for bearing with us with this few social media posts. You can blame Mornay that's sitting over there. That you bared with us, that we promoted the business a little bit. But thank you for the reception we've had there, and the amount of rounds of golfs we've had in the last month, and especially in the last 3 weeks, just blew our minds. So thank you to everybody here. And whatever you're doing in your day job, whatever you're doing in your life, and whatever ambition you have, whatever plans you have, we bless that journey with you today. And thank you for giving us the time, as always. And Anton, if you could just become a little bit fatter for your next one, if you don't mind. I just want to sit next to you and have some relatability.
Yeah. Next time he comes, we'll just do a drug test. And I'm not talking about drugs. I'm talking about the injection.
Yeah. It might be on the roids.
Is that right?
No.
What did I want to say now? Oh, guys, if there's anything from Anton's perspective, if you have any questions or something... As a golfer or a professional golfer or upcoming person,
hit me up.
Put it in the comments and we'll have him back then and we'll run through some of the stuff because I think he's gone through it all. So let us know if you have any questions and run it through the comments.
Absolutely.
And if you've watched this whole episode, we appreciate you because this was a good one.
Yeah, very good. And I want everybody to go and support Anton. Make contact with him. Go for a lesson with him. And like we always say, everybody's got their coach and who they deal with. But in this area, there's a lot of golfers. And if you want just a normal human interaction and to get some insight into the game and learn how to do it better, mentally or physically... Physically, I think the specimen sits here. Mentally,
he's a big man, but a weak man.
He's a gentle
I'm
giant.
I'm a teddy bear. I've been in 3 fights in my life, and my mom won all of them.
And Anton, again, same for you. Bless you on your journey and everything you're doing. And also to Abby, because I know she's a big inspiration to you.
She's been my big fighting force. I couldn't have done it without her.
And thanks for sticking out, Abby. You've made him a better man.
Yeah.
And thank you once again. Pascal, Monet, to you guys always. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Lekker.